Okay, welcome back. Hour number two on this Monday, and we're off and running. It is really something out there to watch what's happening and to realize. And I know you, for the most part, realize you don't necessarily have to agree, but you realize the potential here. That so many people out there that you see walking around every day that don't listen to this program or its wonderful guests don't get it. They're out of the game. They're not players. They're just riffraff. They're being pushed around by these scumbags. And I hate to use harsh language like that, but believe me, I'm holding back. I just hate them. This is not what America was all about. It's not what our people are all about. Our people have been deceived. They have been misdirected. They have been conned, duped, and anything else you can name that fits in that shopping bag. And they just don't get it. Now they're addicted now. Terminally addicted to their screens. Terminal screen addiction. 5 hours a day on average. 5 hours a day on average. That's not life. That's not living. That's not discerning what reality is or creating your own interpretation of reality and living in relation to that. That's just staring and drooling. That's Pavlovian. That's what they've got. And they're very clever at it. Very, very clever. Hello, Mitchell Henderson. Welcome back, Mitch.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. Good to have you on, as always. We get email every week about the contributions you've made. And it's a regular occurrence here. I sent several over, but people really appreciate what you have been through in life, what you've learned, your perspective. The simple fact that you're still alive shows an extraordinary resiliency, to put it mildly, and yet you know how to help people and teach them. You're welcome. Go ahead.
So this is a teaching moment. So when I went in 1986, when I went to the military intelligence staff officers course at Fort Bragg, the newly renamed Fort Bragg.
That was nice. Let me ask you real quick. Hold that thought.
Sure.
What do you think about renaming the Gulf to the Gulf of America? Now, let me say my piece real short.
Okay.
Look at the map. The part that hugs the Gulf Coast from Florida all the way over to Texas and to Monterrey, Mexico, or right around in there, that should be the Gulf of Mexico. Down at Yucatan, the whole Yucatan Peninsula, all around Mexico and all up to Texas, that should be the Gulf of Mexico. Look at the map. You can see there's room for everybody there. So I don't know what the bitch is, you know, moaning,
well,
screaming.
My opinion is kind of like, the whole Western Hemisphere is named America. And we live in North America, and then
that's
there's South
all
America,
true.
And
all true.
Then we have Central America. So, honestly, in my opinion, Gulf of America sounds sort of generic to me, you know.
There's nothing
it's
particularly personalized about it. It is generic. But if you give, and people grumble all the time about this, but if you give some to both, then they got nothing to gripe about, right? Give the Mexicans their Gulf of Mexico. Look at a map. Give the Americans the Gulf of America. Whatever. Pacific Coast, East Coast.
Gulf of Texas would be okay.
Go ahead. Have at it. I've done more to me. I couldn't
not
care
so
less.
Generic. That's very particular. You know. Anyways, right. I think that's a distraction. Okay.
Of course it is. Yes, it's all a distraction now. This is a dog and pony freak show of the highest magnitude.
It's like agitation propaganda. They're agitating us. This is like, I'll get into a little bit later what I think it is, because it was kind of a hard sell to me, but I'm beginning to see it and accept it now. But let me just continue
go,
on.
Go to it. Yeah.
When I went to this class, they really told us that if we really want to know what's going on, that there's open source information all over the world. Just look at their open source information. And then they told us how to do a thing called meta analysis of the news. Okay, a good example, let me give you an example of meta analysis. So in George Orwell's 1984, The news is streaming to people through the tube, you know, Big Brother's tube all day long and stuff. And so every day they're saying, Oceania is our friend. Oceania is our ally. Oceania is good.
Oceania
has always been our friend. And then one day they come in and the news is saying, Oceania is evil. Oceania has always been evil. Oceania is our enemy. Oceania has always been our enemy.
George Orwell.
Okay. So the meta analysis of the news shows that one day they're saying one thing, then the next day they change the tune. That shows you that shows you to pay attention. A big change is happening. Something is going on. So on this program, I've done a few meta analyses of the news. The first one was before the election. I noticed that Saturday Night Live started having funny skits about Biden, which they did not have for a long time. That was followed up by the LA Times refusing to endorse Harris, and then the Washington Post and USA Today refused to endorse Harris. That told me, that's beta analysis of news. That told me that Donald Trump was going to be the next president. Okay. And I even mentioned at the time that, you know, if we elect the Marxist Harris, she's the Antichrist. If we elect the Zionist Trump, he's the Antichrist. So,
right.
So it doesn't matter which one they do. So the next meta-analysis I did was I watched the Iranian and the Hezbollah news about what was going on in Syria. And one day, there was a big change in the tune. All of a sudden, the whole story changed in Iran and in Hezbollah's Al-Amanar, their news outlet. And what happened the very next day is Assad fell and fled the country. The next day, after this change in the news, okay? So whenever you have changes in the news like that, you can tell something big is happening. And then you start looking. You have to go to their news and start seeing what's going to happen. Okay, so what's changed in ours is 2 weeks ago, Mike Waltz was saying basically everything that Jake Sullivan said about Russia and Ukraine. There was no difference between them. Okay, General Kellogg was saying what Sebastian Gorsa and Mike Pompeo said. There was no difference between them.
Our
Secretary of State Rubio was saying the same thing that Tony Blinken said. There's no difference between them. Okay, and now in just a week, look what has changed. This is what's changed. Russia is not the enemy of the United States. They do not intend to invade NATO. Zelensky was trying to make a big deal that, Russia's a threat to NATO, so we have to stop them in Ukraine. And Trump said, no, Russia is not a threat to NATO. Okay, then the United States is going to talk to Russia, and they says, well, Europe isn't going to be at that meeting because, you know what, Europe made the Minsk Accords, which their leaders publicly announced that it was a deception, that they really didn't mean it, and that they were just trying to buy time for Ukraine to build their forces up big enough to attack Russia. Okay, which Merkel said and which Sarkozy both openly admitted that they were not sincere when they made this treaty, the Minsk Accords, with Russia in 2014. So the United States is smart enough to know that there's no point in having any European power involved in the negotiations because the word isn't worth shit. They broke their last. They were insincere the last time they made a treaty. So bringing them in is a pointless, okay? And being this is Zelensky, and Zelensky saying, well, it doesn't matter what they talk about. It's what they talk about with me that matters. No, it does not, Mr. Zelensky, because guess what? You are on life support from the United States. You will do what we say because we've given you the money to do everything. And as a matter of fact, Mike Waltz says, you're going to have to pay that all back to the American. Okay, there's a shift, a big shift in everything, in our attitude towards Russia. It's like Russia has said all along, we want a permanent treaty, not just some ceasefire or something. The United States now says, oh, no, it has to be a permanent and lasting solution to the problem. So we're saying everything. We're saying, Pete Hegseth said, well, it's unrealistic for Ukraine to be in NATO. That's off the table. Ukraine will not be in NATO. And he said that it's unrealistic to believe that Ukraine can get its territories back. It's not going to get them back. So in other words, it's like we've gone completely reverse of what Biden and Blinken were saying. In just a week, we've changed the whole tune. Okay, so next you have to ask the reason why. Why have we changed our tune? What is it that we want? That's the question you have to ask. What is it that the United States wants? Okay, well, at the same time all this is going on, the United States is talking about supporting Israel and bombing the nuclear facilities in Iran. Okay, but the United States is already aware that if the U.S. sends jets into Iranian airspace, Russia and China will get involved. Okay, so they're not going to do that. They're not going to take off from any military bases in Arab lands because Iran has already said that means war with those countries. Okay, so this is what the United States is banking on right here. They're making good with Russia because they want to attack Iran and they want Russia to back off. Okay. This is the game that they're playing. They're trying to act nice with Russia, get on Russia's good side, so that when I say we support Israel, I mean by refueling, giving them the bombs and the intelligence to attack those nuclear sites, okay? It doesn't mean that we're going to send our aircraft into Iranian airspace. That's a different story. But you can't predict. When you do something like that, you can't predict what's going to happen. Iran, if Iran decides to retaliate against Israel by shooting 1,000 missiles at Israel, Israel wants to drag us into a full-blown war over Iran. Israel has gotten us to agree that we will support them attacking their nuclear sites. But this is just part way. What Israel wants to do is they want Iran to respond, and then Israel wants an all-out war with Iran. Russia's not going to put up with that. This is how World War III begins. This is how you and everybody you love is going to perish. Your life is going to change forever. Those that you love are going to die in a thermonuclear war. Okay, and remember what I say about the thermonuclear war. The war itself will last a couple hours, about 10% of Americans will die. But within a year, 90% of Americans will be dead. They'll be dead from famine. They'll be dead from the elements. They'll be dead from pestilence. They'll be dead from, violence.
They'll be dead from their COVID injections. They'll be dead from radioactivity, from fallout being spread coast to coast with the jet stream.
They will be dead from many things. Okay, we're going to do this for Israel. Okay, for Israel, we're going to sacrifice everything for Israel. All our lives, our hopes, our dreams. Oh, we're putting that all on the table for Israel.
Mitch,
whole thing about going friendly with Russia is all about what we want to do next.
Yep. Keep in mind that everything Trump does is so transparent now. He's being ordered. Yeah. He's being instructed. And we are toast. We are toast.
Yeah.
We've been sold out and betrayed beyond most people's ability to realize. They can't. They just don't believe it. And that's how they get away with a lot of it. It's unbelievable. But it's true.
At the same time, though, most people think that Trump is a savior. Let me tell you, Jeff, I feel very relieved that a lot of the Marxist pressure is off, from the Marxist agenda. The pressure is off. We look at things here in America already. There's a war in America, too. And what that war is the Democrats have lost power. Power is really slipping away. And they've got people out protesting shipping immigrants out of the country. Well, that's a losing proposition because most of the people in the country want them shipped out. Okay, they say things like, oh, well, they're not just picking up violent criminals, they're picking up, you know, nonviolent illegal aliens too. Well, listen, this is common sense. If you're hanging out in some apartment where a violent illegal alien is, and you're just a regular illegal alien, when ICE comes, they're not going to just pick the one violent criminal out. They're going to pick every illegal alien in that room up and take them away too. You know, so technically, it's their fault if you're an illegal alien, but not a vicious criminal one, and you insist on hanging out with gang members and people who are, guess what? You're going to go too. You're going to go with them. Why would they not pick you up? You've broken the law. They're going to pick you up, okay? So that's one thing. People are out in the streets protesting, and what's so cool is they're out there protesting with Mexican flags. They're showing the people protesting the ejection, the deportation of these illegal aliens are showing how much they hate Americans and how much they hate America. They're showing you in your face how much they hate you.
Okay? Yes, sir.
So let's go to the other. Let me tell you another propaganda thing that the left is doing right now. So Trump is firing thousands of federal workers. Okay, do you understand why he's doing that, right?
Several reasons. Go ahead with yours. Go ahead.
Okay, well, one is the Biden administration massively tried to hire DEI people. Their thought being, if we can get these people into the civil service system, they will be in the government as opposition for decades to come. And they can suborn the system. They can corrupt it. They can be opposition, internal opposition to whatever the they want to do. Okay, they also will do shitty work because it's not merit based. So what happens is Trump says, "Okay, well we're firing everybody that's not already past probation. In some cases that's 1 year, in some cases it's 2 years. So he can do that without cause. He doesn't need a reason to do that." He can just fire him, blanket fire him, right? That's within his ability to do. Okay, so now he's got to fire everybody that was hired because under the law, he can't pick out people of color, women, and LGBT people to fire. He can't do that because that's discrimination, right? So he has to fire everybody hired, even if they're white people, right? So what does the news do? What does CBS and NBC do? Well, they're bringing on these fired people to talk to on the news. And the fired people that they interview, you'll notice that they are all white people who have been fired because they don't want to call to your attention that these are people of color, women, or LGBT people that have been fired. Okay, they are, but the news is showing you is just the white people who have been fired.
Right.
And under DEI, these are woke, liberal, left white people, okay? So do we really want them in the government anyway, right? Good question. So this is a purge that he's doing. He's stopping the immigration. He's stopping white replacement. He's supporting, he's sanctioning South Africa for the mistreatment of white people. He's giving the right basically everything that they want, so that he will not have them go against him on his Israel policy. Okay, so the thing that I wanted to say, this is something that some people had told me over a month ago. These special operators were telling me, they said, you know, the whole 4 years of Biden was a red herring operation. That was to get people so frustrated, so frustrated with
it was
the
PSYOP
scheme.
It was an obvious PSYOP.
We would look at Trump as a savior because Trump is actually a superficial person of superficial intelligence. He's shallow. He's not profound in his thinking. I mean, here's the difference. You ask J.D. Vance a question, and you get a deep, profound, good, solid answer. you asked Trump the same problem question, and well, it's very shallow and sort of meaningless. Okay.
You get WWE really is what you get back. Bitch.
Yeah, right.
WWE.
Yep.
That's what you get.
Yep. So here's the thing is that I think the special operators were right. I think it was a setup because remember in the last program I was talking about how Zionism is the point and Marxism is just a method. For example, so Moses Hess wanted a Jewish philosophy to be the highest, the most popular philosophy of the world. And that's why he created Marxism. That was supposed to be the Messiah philosophy that everybody would go gaga over, okay? That everybody would see as the highest possible thinking. The epitome of intellect, okay, was Marxism. And this was to bring a world about where Zionism could accomplish its goal of setting up a state in Israel and having that state basically rule the world. Okay, and be the most world famous, the Messiah. In other words, the Jewish philosophy would be the Messiah of the world. That's what Marxism is. It's the savior of humanity of the world. Okay, so as we look at the violence of the last century, we can see that in Germany in World War I, they were trying to bring the German philosophy up, which was about individualism, about thinking for yourself, about personal responsibility, stuff like this. It was a conservative revolution. But we fought World War I to nip that in the bud because it was the Marxist philosophy that had to win. Notice that World War I, that's when the Bolsheviks, which were all Jewish guys, took over the Soviet Union and murdered 100 million people over the next 70 years or whatever.
You got it.
So next, what was happening is, as a reaction to this Marxist Zionist thing, you had the Weimar Republic in Germany. And Germany said, you know, and this is important because, see, Moses Hess and the Marxists thought Germany was the place to start worldwide Marxism. That was the country they picked out to be the one who would start worldwide Marxism because they thought it was industrially the strongest position to do so. All right.
Yes.
So, what happened is, of course, you had a backlash against Marxism in the National Socialist Party, and they stopped it there. Right. So, what World War II was? World War II was a war to save Marxism from extinction because the German alliance was called the Anti-Comintern Pact. It was the Anti-Communist International Pact. This is a pact to stop international communism. That's what the German side of World War II was about. And of course, America came in to stop that. We saved communism for extinction. So then we go to the next war, the Cold War. Well, what was the problem there? The problem there was that these Marxists in Russia decided, okay, we're going to, the Jews aren't going to be in control and we're going to persecute Jews. They're not going to run nothing in Russia. And notice that because they mistreated their Jews, because one of the big things that we were pushing under Reagan was, well, we have to rescue the Jews of the Soviet Union, okay, and we bring them here, we help them escape from the country, but pressure on the Soviet Union not to mistreat their Jews. So guess what? The Soviet Union fell because although it was Marxist, it was not supporting Jews. It was not letting the Jews be the people in charge anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the change that brought about their fall. Okay. So then what happened is Marxism just took over America. We became the Marxist leader of the world.
I have a question, Mitch. When
yeah,
you
sure.
look back with your knowledge, your perspective, your wisdom, when you look back at World War II, I am not trying to put words in anyone's mouth here. How do you see it now in terms of Germany or Marxist Bolshevism? How do you see it? They've got Germany painted out forever to be the most horrible, evil ogres, the worst people ever. George Patton didn't agree with that. Our greatest general said, you're wrong. We fought the wrong enemy.
Well, Germany now is a Marxist country. It's a very Marxist country.
They wrote that in advance and said, this is where it's going if we lose. They wrote that in 1943. I have it.
Yeah.
I have it. They wrote it. They said exactly where it was going to go.
When J.D. Vince went to Europe, he was telling him, well, you've got a popular party here that you are not allowing them political representation. You're punishing them, and you won't let them have free speech. J.D. Vance got all over them for not having free speech. Then NBC makes the same. Remember a few years ago when the students were marching in New England against free speech? They were marching against it because free speech allows truth.
Yeah.
Okay. So what the newscaster said is Margaret, I can't remember what her last name is. So she's talking to Marco Rubio, and she says, well, free speech is what allowed the Nazis to commit the Holocaust. Well, this is absurd. If you allow free speech, you allow Nazis to take over the world, is what our news media is trying to say. And Marco Rubio says, no, that's not true. Says the problem wasn't free speech. He says, if you think there was free speech in Nazi Germany, you're delusional. It's like that wasn't happening. Okay, so it's a part of that canard that they're trying to create, that free speech is dangerous to democracy. Free speech is dangerous to freedom. Well, if you're not free to say whatever you want, is it freedom at all? Anyways, it's not really free. You're not really free if you can't say what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But to Democrats, saving democracy means dictatorship. Freedom of speech means hate speech. Free speech is hate speech. You have to control the narrative. I think Ayanna Pressley got up with a week ago and said, and just said it out loud and said, we have to have censorship to have freedom. Listen, this is Orwellian, people. This is Orwell's 1984 speaking here. Freedom is slavery. Okay, this is typical of them. And stuff. And that there's anybody out there that this makes sense to, that freedom of speech is hate speech. Free speech is hate speech. This is what they want to say. And I even spoke once about how Obama and Trudeau and all these people, the Clintons, said, well, we have to get back to the narrative where only CBS, NBC, and ABC tells us what we all are supposed to believe. And we shouldn't have any other narratives out there that anybody could listen to or hear. And this was a big thing of theirs. They mm-hmm. wanted to go back to where everybody's on the same sheet of music, and they can't do that with alternative media around. Okay.
Totally correct.
But it's their own fault, because what they did during the COVID pandemic, all the apparent and transparent lying that they did in 2020, mm-hmm. just out and out lying to us, they did it to themselves. That 2020 is the year that the media, the government, and science lost all credibility with vast swaths of humanity. That was a big awakening. People stopped listening to the government, stopped trusting the government, stopped trusting the news, stopped trusting the scientists. It's their own fault. That was they tried too overtly to lie to us. And then what did they do? They doubled down, Jeff. They tried to tell us, everybody can see there's boys and there's girls. They tried to tell us, oh, there's no such difference. They tried to tell us that race is a social construct. Even though you can see white people, yellow people, and black people, you're what you're seeing is nonsense. That's not true. They tried to tell us, they tried to get us to believe something that we could see was not true. Okay?
Absolutely. Plain as day. You have to be beyond delusional to see it. Look, there's a war on human mental development. I'd say war of semantics. And they fight it all the time. And you really need to pay attention to that. And if you don't know what the word semantics is, it's something you really should know, because it's one of their primary mechanisms of combat. They use it all the time.
Sure.
Here, let me do this for fun. Here, I'll look up dictionary.com. Semantics. Let's see what it says here. All of you want to keep this in mind. Semantics. The study. This is it. The study of meaning. What do words mean? When they start telling you black means white and up means down, that is a semantic war on your organized intellectual processes in your mind. They're trying to completely upset and confuse your brain. I've been talking about the war of semantics on us for years, and it's getting to be more, I have to tell you, it's clever. They know what they're doing. They know their victims. They've got them all laid out.
So I even looked up on AI. I said, I asked the question, I said, is critical theory Marxism? Okay. Now, I asked this question because I know the answer. The people who coined the word critical theory, this was Adorno and Horkheimer, two Jewish Marxist philosophers. In 1956, they wrote a book called Towards a New Manifesto, meaning a new communist manifesto.
Right.
And they said, listen, Americans will never accept anything called socialism, communism, or Marxism. So in order to make this happen, we have to change the name of it, and we're changing the name of it to critical theory. Okay, so in other words, the people who coined the term critical theory, Adorno and Horkheimer, they coined this word, and they're saying that critical theory is basically a euphemism for Marxism. But when I asked AI this, AI answered, well, yes, initially it was, but then other philosophies entered into it. So AI is not really truthful. AI is in on the propaganda brainwashing thing. I mean, it has to tell you that a little bit of truth, because anybody is going to lose all credibility if they say no. So they have to say yes. But now it's something different.
It's 10 times smarter than the average person. They play these games in your head. Just remember, meaning. AI is a master at changing meaning by degrees. They don't have to do it wholesale. It's a slow process, although the way they play
it's what the socialists, the Fabian socialists, this is like Bertrand Russell and these people, back in the early 1900s, their philosophy is what they call, their strategy is what they called the eventuality of gradualism. If you gradually introduce and push these things, this will become the new reality. And here we are, people. We're there.
Yes, we are. It's not going to slow down. AI, and I still laugh to myself when I see these Sammy Altman and all of them. I don't care. I'm not picking on Sammy. All of them think that they're going to stay ahead of AI. How are they going to stay ahead of AI? I don't care how wise their programmers are. A programmer with 120 IQ cannot compete with an AI of 1,500 IQ. It's going to be outsmarted sooner or later every time. And that's only the current iteration of it. Wait till it gets up to 5,000 IQ, human equivalent IQ. You think you're going to hold on to it and control it?
So let me say, just give you some semantics right here and right now, okay? So these people, Marxists, are atheists, okay? So they're materialists and they're atheists, okay? You know, in the Old Testament, they asked God who he was, and he said Yahweh. And Yahweh means existence, to be, existence. So God means
existence. That's interesting. I've never heard that. That's good.
Oh, you didn't? You didn't know that? Yeah, actually in the Bible it would say, I am that I am, which is existence. This is another way of saying existence. So then atheists say God does not exist. So that's the same thing as saying existence does not exist. So the existentialist philosopher, Jean-Paul Sartre, who is atheist, his book on existentialism was called Being and Nothingness, because to an atheist, there's no existence. Mm-hmm. So the next philosopher that came out after him, French existentialist, was Albert Camus. And Albert Camus just called his philosophy, we call him an existentialist, but he called himself an absurdist. He believed in absurdism. In other words, if there is no God, there's no values or meaning in the universe. Does that kind of look at the past 4 years of the world we lived in? It's absurd. It's absurdism. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's absurd to say that there's no such thing as a boy and a girl. It's absurd. But this is the world. There's no meaning and there is no value in this atheist world where the foundation of atheism is saying there is no existence does not exist. God does not exist, is really saying existence does not exist. And if existence does not exist, there's no meaning and there's no value. Okay. So this is a short treatise on modern existentialist philosophy. Okay. And basically what these people who are running our world think is absurd. But they take it deadly seriously. Okay. So there's no foundation of their thought. Okay. There's no basis.
Got it. Yeah. We're headed down the drain. That's not you people, it's not the majority. Maybe it is the majority, but the war is going to go badly for us. We can't. What are we going to do? Do we go to the ballot box and vote the bums out? I think we've learned our lesson, haven't we? So what are we going to do? Think about it. You are going to have to change, and you will have to lead by example. That's your best bet, right there. Put the phone down, stop the 5 hours a day, learn, and go out and find out what reality really is, not the crap on the screen.
Oh, yeah, it's way far from reality. This is a consensus reality that they've killed. What we live in is the Jewish-constructed consensus reality. That is the reality you live in, and it's absurd. So let me go back to Jean-Paul Sartre. He wrote a book called Nausea, which was elected for the Nobel Prize in 1956. And in this book, he's telling what happened when he found his authentic self, okay, through existentialism, and he's basically the world melts around him. And what that melting of the world means is that there is no value, there is no meaning, there's nothing means anything. Okay, so so there's another philosopher that got the same idea, and his name was Friedrich Nietzsche. And Nietzsche was a nihilist, and nihilism is there is nothing of value, there is nothing with meaning, there is nothing that's important. It's all stupidity. Okay. And Nietzsche, of course, was an atheist also. So, you know, when they say godless Marxism, that is what they're talking about. It is nihilistic. So do you understand now why Marxists could kill 200 million people in the 20th century? Because they have no values. They have no humanity. They have no purpose or meaning. Okay. And these are the people that want to run your world, people, and we're letting them run the world. Okay. So let me just say something to the Christians in the audience. Okay. I realize not everybody that listens is a Christian, but I feel like sometimes I should address some questions that they may have. So it's like, what to do? What should you do to get ready? Well, there's a fine line between tempting God and trusting God. For example, when Christ was on the tower and the devil said, oh, jump down, the angels will catch you. And Christ says, do not tempt the Lord thy God. Okay. So that's like the people that said, well, I don't have to do anything. I'll just sit here, and then when the time comes, they'll suck me up in the sky, and I'll be safe. Okay, that's tempting God. Okay, now, what's not tempting God is storing up some food, getting some water together, finding a place where you can run to and hide. I mean, there's things that you can do as a person that you don't need God to do. You can do that. Then the rest of it, the things you can't do, like world politics or even national politics, even local politics, you can't do nothing about that. That's where you need to trust God, okay, to take care of you on those things. But there's things that you can do that you need to do, and you should not tempt God and just ignore doing those things. Not only that, but when you ignore doing those things, you're pretty much telling God you don't even believe any of this is going to happen. Okay, so it's a cop-out. And it's something that you remember that churches are institutions also. They're money-oriented. They're even 501c. They're even tax-exempt things, and it's all about money. Why don't your preachers tell you to go out and get ready for what's coming? Is because they don't want the gravy train to stop. They need you to keep paying money into the church to pay their salary. Okay, so they have a vested interest and telling you, oh, yeah, we're not in the end times. I mean, I spent my whole life, and I never heard church people ever talk about, these are mainline churches, and Catholic churches. They would never talk about, they would never admit that these are the end times, okay? So they're a part and parcel of the deception of the times that you live in, okay? If they're telling you, oh, no, this isn't going to happen anytime soon, this is 1,000 years into the future, this is a lie. I mean, look around you. You can see the decadence, the decay, the evil, the nihilism that it is in our world. We are living in Sodom and Gomorrah now.
Okay? That's true. Unless you're there's an exception. If you're staring in terminal addiction to your screen, you don't see it.
Yes. It is addiction. I would suggest people study the fact of what is idolatry. Okay. First of all, think of what is worship. Worship is that thing that you pay attention to. Okay. If you never listen to your wife or spend time with her, but you tell her, oh, I worship you, well, no, you don't, because worship means you're going to invest time in that. Okay.
Right.
So what do people worship? They worship their TV. They worship their social media. They worship anything except reality. Even if you're
icons.
Not a Christian,
that's right.
Even if you're not a Christian, you got nature out there. You know, nature's far more beautiful and intricate than anything that man has put together. You know, at least look at spend your time with nature instead of spending your time with these brainwashing machines. Okay, because that's what they are. So that's what it is. Not only that, but the other thing is covetousness, which is acquisitiveness, like buying things. You remember they say, oh, you got to keep up with the Joneses, you know, you got to get your car, your boat, your all this. This is all a distraction trail to distract you from reality. You know, it's like these, and Marxism depends on materialistic point of view, okay, where materials bring you happiness. They do not. All my life, it's like I had, starting as a little kid, I started smoking cigarettes when I was 13, started drinking booze regularly when I was 14, because what was I bombarded with in movies and society in general was smoking's cool, drinking is cool, blah, 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 you know, and then I go through my whole life, and then I realized, I realized when I was 21 that smoking it feels like a road crew going through my lungs, paving it. And I quit when I was 21, thank goodness. But drinking, I drank for much longer than that. And it was like one day I was like, you know, how did they convince me that drinking was fun and that drinking makes you feel good? It makes me feel bad, and I hate hangovers, you know. I've had a lot of hangovers. I regret all the time I spent in the hangover world. Okay, so... But they convinced me very well that this was fun. This is a good time.
Well, it's a monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, it wasn't a good time waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning to catch the airplane in the Cayman Islands back to the United States, and then barfing at the airport and setting off in line a barforama like I vomited, and I ran to the restroom, and as I was going, I could hear other people just a chain reaction of barfing in the line behind me, because everybody else partied the night before too. Okay, so we were all convinced that this was fun. Okay, it sucked. It was miserable.
I've been lucky, because even if I smell hard liquor, I get goosebumps. I cringe. I don't. It doesn't work for me. None of it. Just doesn't work. And all I can say is, if beer tasted as good as Pepsi-Cola used to, this country would be drunk 25 hours a day. Beer, I can't, I don't like it. I don't understand. I'm lucky.
Well, they convinced us. They sold us on liking it. It's marketing. You know, your whole life is you are an appetite that they market to. That's what it is. We're all appetites that they market to. It's just covetousness. This is idolatry, okay? So it's very subtle, but this is what we do. This is the brainwashing. It's to distract us. They want us busy, involved in hedonism, so that we're not paying attention to the evil things they do that gets our friends and our family killed.
No, you're totally correct.
We are going to go after hedonistic desires even as they're impoverishing us. So we will own nothing and still be happy, you see. So.
What a scene, huh? Noah Yuval Harari.
That's what it's all about.
They got it figured out. You know? They know the weakness of people. All you just dial it in and take control of the mass media by which you can deliver your corrupted, perverted information and programming, and you win. It's not hard.
Yes.
Not hard at all.
You bet. Yeah. You know, and the point that I want to make here is, even if you're not a Christian, you know, it's still, do you want to be a slave to them? Do you want to be enslaved to this? You know, you can still, even if you're not a Christian, you should still have enough dignity to want to, you know, be yourself and live in the real world and
correct.
And understand real things. You know, I mean, there's a beautiful nature out there for you and stuff.
Well, you're not going to find it on your screen. The screen will train you to be anything but human.
There. Yeah. Yes, I mean, look at movies. Look at Hollywood. What are movies about? They're about murder. They're about adultery. They're about thievery. You know, the big bank heist, Ocean's 11, whatever. All the big blockbusters. And look how many hitmen. It used to be male hitmen. Now they have really hot, beautiful female hit ladies and stuff, too. Okay. I mean, anything to entertain you. It's about murder. Okay. It's about. And then you have good murderers, you know. You have good thieves. They're honest, good thieves, okay? And decent adulterers and stuff. I mean, the way they paint these pictures and stuff, the moral vacuum across Hollywood is just overwhelming. You know, no wonder you have to sell your soul to make good in Hollywood, because you are selling your soul when you participate in putting out satanic propaganda like Hollywood puts out, you know. I mean, they even have TV shows.
Plus, where, go from there to porn.
Lucifer is the hero.
Who runs Hollywood? All right, Neil Gabler's
Jewish
book. How the Jews created Hollywood. The fact is a fact.
Yep.
Okay, they did it. More power to them, I guess. They were smart enough to pull it off, and they did it. It's you've got to understand. Know your enemy. Know what they're capable of doing. See what they have done. And understand how they manipulate and control most everyone. They knew greed was the key, but they got hold of the money, and they started feeding the greeders. Greeders.
Yep.
Thank you, Mitch. Talk to you next week.
You're
welcome. Be safe out there.
Okay.
Great job. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye. Mitchell Henderson. All right. Coming up next, a very unusual hour with Dick Allgaier. I'm trying to remember. We did a program. We did a program on the death of JFK with Jim Mars, Dick Allgaier, and it might have been Edward Reardon. Anyway, we'll find out next hour. Back in a few. Hold on.